1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show. Your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. We are on a different day, different schedule. Ed was sleeping, plus, of course, we had to do our four-hour Mueller report special overnight. We did that, posted it, and it's all been redacted. So you only get an intro, and that's it.
We redacted the entire podcast.
Yeah. Isn't that right?
So it's all redacted, and I'm sure you want to know. Man, I just wonder what two sports guys think about all that. And, well, there it is, but it's been redacted. We got to get that mixer fixed. Can you talk again?
Oh, I don't want to talk now. I just want to be quiet.
Yeah, there we go.
You good to go?
We're good to go now.
Maybe you can ask for a new mixer for Christmas.
There we go. It's the mic cord. It's actually not the mixer itself.
You know, this reminds me of what it's actually like to work in media. When things break, you just have to kind of bang on them a little bit. You're not going to get new cameras.
That's right.
You're not going to get new laptops. You're not going to get new mic equipment or new headsets.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get duct tape or electrical tape.
Going to call the engineer. What I need to do? Bang on it.
Yep.
I fixed it. Thank you.
It just reminds me of like the lack of funding that is involved with all things media.
Oh yeah.
But we digress. That's pretty funny. Maybe you can put that on your Christmas list.
All right. Are you Game of Thrones fan?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you like the first one?
Yeah, I think I'm one of five people that liked it. I don't know what people expected.
I liked it. What was wrong with it?
I heard so many complaints from people that were just like, there wasn't enough going on. I was like, what do you mean there's not enough going on?
Here's the way that works, Ed. When there's not enough going on in one show, that means there's another show that's going to really make up for it, right?
That's Game of Thrones. That's exactly what they're setting up.
That's it.
The whole, you know what, if you're listening and you've gotten this far, spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I mean, you should know.
The entire show, the entire first episode was a build-up to so many different things. I was fine with waiting 1 hour to see Jaime Lannister lock eyes with Bran to end the episode. That was incredible. Because the last time Bran saw Jaime Lannister was in Winterfell after being pushed out of the tower.
Ah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And now he's the Three-Eyed Raven, and Jaime is a completely different person. And here's what's going to be crazy.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think Bran is even going to ride up to him and just be like, I hate you. You're the worst person ever. Bran, being the Three-Eyed Raven, is now fully cognizant of all things past, present, and future. That's the three eyes. I think, honestly, he probably sees a redeeming character arc for Jaime. If you think about it, Jaime's probably the most changed character from... Not to go Dungeons and Dragons on us here, from like a chaotic, lawful evil to a, I don't quite want to say chaotic good just yet, but he's certainly starting to see that some of the things that his family has been a part of over the last, I don't know, 250 years is a problem.
And he's become good with one hand tied behind his back, pretty much. So,
okay.
I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
and the point I'm making there, instead of that making him bitter, it actually has made him better, in a way.
Yes, in some ways. He's obviously lost some of his sword-fighting tactics.
Yeah.
One of the best swordsmen in all of Westeros. But it's changed him as a diplomat and as a leader.
Exactly.
It
hasn't been a handicap.
And his relationship with Brienne of Tarth is also something that I fully expect to be explored over the next few episodes. But that's getting back to what we're talking about. I thought the episode was good because the next five episodes are going to be an hour and a half long, pretty much. We've got movies coming for the next 5 weeks.
Yeah.
A lot's got to happen.
Yeah, a lot of things that happen, no doubt. All right, so we have that. Hopefully people enjoyed it or didn't, whichever. Yeah, we'll see. Let's see. We have sports, and you want to see action. Maybe somebody beat up on somebody. Well, we saw that figuratively with the Murray State women's golf team, a 20-stroke win over the second best team in the Ohio Valley Conference Golf Championship, Muscle Shoals, Alabama. They win the championship, and oh my, I don't know. I wasn't surprised they won, but by 20 strokes, come on. That's ridiculous. And think about their head coach having to split duties as interim athletic director. And I thought that might really kind of hamper what she's able to do with the team. Duh, no, it doesn't. Had nothing to do with it. Wow, just amazing. She's one of the most successful coaches in the nation, and in Murray State history, she's right at the top. You do a Mount Rushmore, her face isn't on it. You miss something.
Well, you just misread history.
Yeah.
The more impressive thing that I thought happened was the response from their home tournament, the Jan Weaver. The EKU came in and won on Murray State's home course.
Yeah, yeah.
No disrespect. The game, what I love about the game of golf, and I know you and I have differing views here, but what I love about the game of golf is that it is a team sport in the sense that you must collaborate scores, but you must play as within yourself as an individual.
Can't blame the officials.
You cannot blame a thing.
The other team was defending me pretty well.
Yeah, no, nope. No. Only thing defending you is the mind.
It's you.
Yeah, it is your mind and your body and how you get ready and prepare for certain things. I think that's what I like about the game of golf so much. It's an extremely cerebral sport. And so you lose, so to speak, at your home course about a week and a half, 2 weeks before the OVC tournament. EKU, the prohibitive favorite, I would say.
Right.
Murray State's probably the favorite going into the OVC championship, but EKU is that good. To beat them by 20 strokes, Neil? When you're let's put this into further perspective. You're only up 5 strokes after 2 days, which, by the way, I ridiculously tweeted that it was over at that point because I thought every other event, for some strange reason, I had this brain.
The 2 days, you thought it was a 36 and an 18.
Yeah, 36 and an 18, and I just had a brain aneurysm, I guess, and I tweeted it. I immediately got 3 text messages that were like, Ed, you need to take that down. You're wrong. And I was like, oh, my God. I am a moron. I felt so bad, and I just looked at my laptop, and I was just like, if they lose tomorrow, like, no one's going to know. 5 people are going to know that I tweeted it, but those 5 people know that I'm an idiot, and I jinxed it. So I want to thank the women's golf team for reversing that idiotic tweet. It's still a dynasty. And to win by 20 strokes and how emphatic. The whole team played well on the final day.
Well, the thing you like, Lynette Holmes liked, she's going to be the medalist. There's really no doubt about it. She has a nice lead, having a good tournament. The only way she's not is if someone goes out and shoots, oh, I don't know, maybe a 66 or something.
On day, like on day
her,
two.
Like her teammate, Anna Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only reason she's not the medalist is because of that. And she turns out to be the OVC Golfer of the Year. But my, oh, my, what a finish.
Well, and you talk about the rest of the lineup, McDowell, Surrendren, Jane Watts. Watts playing in her first OVC tournament, nearly, I mean, her final day at Muscle Shoals was absurd. All 5 of them played fairly well. Sarah, if I'm not mistaken, her best round was the final day.
It was, so, yeah. I mean, she, freshman, did what she could. Her future is going to be much better, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and
she had a good year.
Yeah, the whole team had a good year, and this is... And this is without Lucilla, you know, who was OVC Freshman of the Year a couple years ago. So, I mean, she played, you know, as an individual for most of the season, and they went with a different rotation this year. And so just the way that they were playing toward the end of the season, you knew that they would contend for a third straight title. By the way, third time in school history and third time in 26 years since the beginning of the program that the Racers have won 3 consecutive OVC titles. Wow. It's 12 titles, but 3 times in that stretch they've won 3 in a row. You know, the they've given them the Michael Jordan basically, and taken over. And you knew Lynette was going to play well. She's been consistent all year. That's why she's OVC Player of the Year. But Anna Moore's second day, 66. I mean, she sniffed. Dave texted me, and said that she sniffed 64, that she missed 2 birdie putts that were within 5 feet.
Wow.
That were just, the green was fast, the rain had died off, and the greens were slick. And, you know, to say that she sniffed a 64, That's legendary stuff. 66 well, no is already good enough.
Well, no one's done it in an OVC women's no. tournament. So, no. I mean, she equaled, could have added it, she done that.
Yeah, she was that close to just having the best round in OVC history. And then, of course, they played even better. Lynette was masterful in the back nine to close it. I was looking at her numbers, and good Lord, what'd she have? Five birdies in nine holes?
I mean, she was fabulous.
That's how
As
you put
I said,
it
just...
That's how you put it away.
Took a teammate to just have one of those days to beat her. Otherwise, she's the medalist and the OVC Player of the Year.
Right, and a big congratulations. You made a great point to close it off. Not just Mount Rushmore. A lot of distractions this year for
sure.
Velvet. Yeah. Not necessarily bad distractions. Her interview with WPSC yesterday on Thursday afternoon, I thought was really good. I watched it, and you're exactly right. She had plenty of things going on in her life this year, the change in direction with leadership, you know, the hiring of Kevin Saul. She had all these other things on her desk, and a lot of maturation from her team, who perhaps didn't get to have Velvet day in and day out for 6 to 8 months because she was so busy with her other duties for Murray State Athletics. It's a testament not only to her and her coaching, but it's a testament to her team being able to basically kind of guide themselves a little bit. And you got to give some credit to a lot of the assistantship there. You know, Will Snodgrass probably had a really big role in making sure that the team stayed the course, so to speak. Forgive the pun, but it's just, you know, they were able to kind of stay within themselves. And they had a great fall, you know, for all things considered. So that just really parlayed into another OVC championship.
Well, we'll stay on golf just for a moment, just because of the Woods guy. Because we can't really do a show and not mention him. And I really wasn't that excited about it because for years it's been, oh, he's back. He's back. He's back. No, he's not. He's not back. Okay, he's back. You appeared to think he was back going into Saturday, and then after Saturday you think, okay, he is back. I don't watch much golf unless he's about to win. I just enjoy watching him. I think he has terrific charisma. I love it when he's playing well. And then Sunday, he just went out, and he was Tiger Woods, just like you flip the clock back to 2008. Same dude. There you go.
It was an unbelievable finish, too. I mean, you have to think, if I'm not mistaken, I may be wrong on this statistic, but I think I'm right. He had never won a major when trailing after 54 holes. He was down two strokes going into the final day. Molinari had been perfect bogey-free. Everything happened that you thought was going to happen. Molinari had the lead. There was a nice jumbled pack up at the top with leaders. Exactly what you want for a Masters Sunday. And then, boom, we get vintage Tiger.
Yeah.
And everybody else crumbles after about hole 12. And I say crumbled loosely. I mean,
people still
scored well.
They weren't 80s.
Yeah, but they a couple double bogeys. Molinari had his first mistake on 12. You know, then Woods goes right at, you know, a couple of birdie shots, basically just attacked greens, turned back the clock, so to speak. Even had, I mean, he was wearing his red faux turtleneck. You know, his man, it was unbelievable. Neil, I watched it from most of Sunday, actually. I spent most of Sunday watching the final round. Because even if he hadn't won, he was going to finish in the top three or four. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was just going to show the trend, continue the trend of, well, I mean, if you take a look at his last three majors, if you combine his scores of his last three majors, he's the lowest scorer of all players in the world. So the scoring is starting to trend back in that, hey, I'm back to being Tiger Woods range. But to see the way that he was able to play, you just knew. With a two-stroke lead, when Koepka parred instead of birdied 18, and he kept a two-stroke lead coming up to the 18th green, you just knew it was over. You could hear the roar of the crowd, the roar of the gallery. They knew that, I mean, Woods had to basically throw his ball in the water to give away the Masters. And he bogeyed that final hole. He even said, you know, he came off that left side, laid up basically to the green because he had a little bit of mud on the ball, didn't want to attack it and leave it fat into the gallery. Comes up a little short on the green, safely chips on the backside so that he knew that he can make the two putt. He knew he had it then, and so did the rest of the world, basically. And just a marvelous finish. Great top, top cluster there of players. But when Tiger's good, the game is good. And I, whether you like Tiger Woods or not, that's hard to argue. You can't say, well, he had that checkered past. And
A lot of people have. Yeah. And he overcame it.
And he's at least now, right now, it seems that he's on the direct and much more righteous path to success and to being a better person. He made mistakes. I'm not saying Michael Vick made mistakes. Plaxico Burress made mistakes. People make mistakes. Ryan Leaf, former bust quarterback for the NFL, made mistakes. I have no problem with people trying to get that second chance and be redemptive. Tiger looks to be on that, not only from a physical standpoint, from a health standpoint, but also from a mental and a spiritual standpoint. And this Masters, I mean, 2 years ago he almost quit, and today he's a Masters champion.
That's the most golf we've talked in this, I think, in my podcast history right there.
Yeah.
That's the most ever right there. So history has been made. It is an historic event. Unprecedented, as we learned yesterday. One reporter didn't know what that meant, but he knows now. Now let's go into Murray State Basketball National Signing Week. It began Wednesday. I was a little antsy because and finally we get the word. I think it was a school event yesterday that Noah Kamba has officially signed with Murray State, part of their class. The thing I like about the kid, I was looking up his stats, and of course I did not have those called up right here, but had a terrific senior season, 16 points a game. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But 13 assists per game in a 32-minute high school game. That's outstanding. The year before, he scored more, 21.9, 10.2. But Matt McMahon says he's quick, versatile point guard, creates for others on the court, can score the ball at multiple levels, brings great character, strong work ethic to the program. We believe Noah's a perfect fit for our culture and style of play. So has a familiar ring to it.
It's an assist every 2.5 minutes.
Wow, that's good.
So I was just doing it real quick, little calculation there. Yeah, 2.5 minutes.
And Tevin Brown's probably going, okay, should be okay this year.
Yeah.
Hit me right here.
Yep, I'm going to be in the left corner. I'm going to be in the right corner. I'm going to be on the elbow. You know, Chico's going to be able to point at him. Listen, I'm going to be over here.
But pretty good class. But also we learned, two players announcing that they are leaving the program. Jalen Johnson, Mike Davis seem to be leaving on good terms. It's not, I don't want any part of these. I hate nothing like that. I think it's just a couple of dudes wanting more playing time. I totally get that.
I have a
limited window to play college basketball. Totally get it. Don't have any issue with it. But now there is one opening. Not sure how the Racers will fill that, but I know they're actively looking.
Yeah, I'm really, really interested to see how this shakes up. Not that I wouldn't be interested. It's an opening on the roster. But you take a look at the way the Racers look right now, does Murray State go get another big? Does Murray State go get an athletic wing? Does Murray State go graduate transfer, which seems to be under the NCAA microscope currently as they revisit the possibility of that rule? Do they go get a JUCO qualifier? Do they go get a freshman? I mean, they're a lot of times you can kind of read the tea leaves and see, okay, well, this is what they're going to get. They've been linked to several different types of candidates.
They can be picky, though.
They can be.
They don't have to just fill the roster.
That's right. They have a great roster coming back. And I don't know. Maybe some more changes coming. I don't have a good read on that at the moment. Don't know of anything currently. I do know there's one scholarship available. So in talking about that, they've been linked to two or three different graduate transfers, a couple sit and play guys. You're exactly right, Neil. You can go get the right fit from a chemistry standpoint and from a needs standpoint. You don't just have to go out and get some bodies, which currently I know the Murray State women's basketball program is working on that. And I say that very, very loosely as well. They've been able to target a few, signees and commitments. And so for upcoming classes. So, this is a situation for the men. You can get a specialist. You can get somebody that you need that you think can be the final part of a recipe. Like, it can be a good bread, What's going to make it a better bread? A pinch of yeast or a little bit of salt, that or pepper. That can be the difference in this roster next season.
And as I've said, here's all what I want out of it, and this will help the racers too. We need Noah to be really good around the arc, and if he needs to go get a pair, he can get a pair. I mean, that's what Noahs are famous for. So if he can do that, this announcer and me will be happy.
Man.
So,
wow. That is an excellent – well, first of all, it's Good Friday. So
we're just tying it all in.
We're tying that in. Noah needs to be really good around the arc.
It's raining threes, a flood of threes.
Get a pair.
It's just
what an amazing
just
pair.
Just right out there now.
Neil, we have to end the podcast right here.
Is that right? With nowhere to go but down or nowhere to go to up?
No way. Wow.
All right, let's move on.
That was awesome, Neil.
Move on to the women's program. The women sign, and it is a really good one. Once I looked up her stats, I thought, okay, she's with the JUCO program. Scored for them. Yeah, all right, that's good. 5'9", Ashley Hunter. But my goodness, a 31-win JUCO team. And she was been the leading scorer the last couple of seasons for them.
Yeah, she put up, I think it was around 1,200 points in 2 years. Last time I checked, that's pretty dang good.
Yeah, had 48 in one game. That's good.
48.
That's a record at that level of JUCO. So that's pretty solid, too.
48. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, didn't she average 21 points a game her freshman year?
Yes, yeah.
And 18 last year?
I didn't see anything about it, but I just looked at both years. It looked as if they were better in terms of personnel the next year. Didn't need to score. Year before, needed to score. Didn't need to score as much second season. 31 wins. That speaks volumes to me.
Basically, who Rochelle has gone and gotten is just a shooter. Somebody who wants to score.
Yep.
That's – the percentages might come down as you move to Division One, but from a scoring standpoint, this team needs one, two, maybe even a third, you know, because you've got a point guard and you've got some post, you know, a little bit of post help coming back next season. You need shooters. You need guards that want to go out there and score the basketball, that want to take over and demand the basketball in certain key situations. Somebody that averages 21 points a game and 17 points a game in 2 years of JUCO is going to demand the basketball. And I think that can bode well for this upcoming season. But I'm sure you're about to mention it. A lot of scholarships available.
Yeah, Michaela Manley, of course, the only senior they lost, but out of Bio gone, Janika Griffith-Wallace, Brianna Crane, and now Paige Barrett have all left the program.
Yeah, and a lot of them for different reasons. I know that there's some questions. And I'm sure any natural fan would wonder why, you know, that many players would all leave in one fell exodus. Paige is transferring to the University of Indianapolis. She's going closer to home.
Playing time issue, too. Get more
well,
playing
and,
time.
And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Indianapolis D3?
Yeah.
And so, you know, she's going to immediately contribute there. If I'm not mistaken, Brianna Crane's moving closer to home. Evelyn Adebayo is exploring the graduate transfer possibility. Janika, same kind of situation. It's not graduate transfer, but is just looking for more of an opportunity elsewhere. And again, I know a lot of questions. You know, Adebayo was close to being an OVC Player of the Year last year after sitting here and playing her first full season as Division I, as a contributing. She played at Gardner-Webb. I don't want to take that away, but to being this big of a contributor is a very new thing for her. So she's looking at that opportunity elsewhere. In the meantime, you know, Rochelle did get a commitment from Hannah McKay. She's gotten a commitment from Charlie Settle. They're in the middle of looking at trying to find more players for this roster now. I personally, if you can go get more JUCO players and a couple more freshmen that you maybe didn't think you had a leg on to begin with, now you can say, oh, well, we have a lot more scholarships available and playing time is going to be here. You hope the return of Macy Gibson from a health perspective, she's able to get on the right track and play a big role next year. I know that this exodus expedites some things.
Right.
It hastens, you know, let's get into win now mode and let's get some players in here that fit the mold and fit the bill. But you're right. Ashley Hunter, a great first step. into filling out the rest of the class of 2019.
On to Racer football for a bit. We saw the scrimmage. You and I were there on the Spanish Saturday. They have another one tomorrow morning, and then the big spring game. Monday we'll even have a special Hey Coach show at 11:30 a.m. at the Big Apple Cafe with Mitch and maybe some players and coaches. Haven't been given the list of what all we're doing. But from what I saw, the defense looked ahead of the offense on that particular day. I was more impressed with the defense.
Yeah, the defense came away with three turnovers. If I'm not mistaken, they were able to come away with three interceptions, actually, two of them in the red zone. That tends to be normal, in my opinion.
Yeah, usually.
A lot of times, especially in early spring.
With
a new quarterback.
And
even early fall. Yeah, Preston had one of those interceptions. I think each quarterback had one of the interceptions. Preston had one in the midfield. Bogner had one going for a touchdown. Tough throw in double coverage in the end zone. And then I think Garrett Bass threw one of the interceptions as well off his back foot. And Jacob Bella, former Callaway County guy, was able to come away with that diving
interception. Yeah, nice play.
It was a great play, honestly. Because any other time, that's an incomplete pass. You know, but he just made a really great play diving in the end zone to kind of catch that football. Mitch even said after the scrimmage that he and his coaching staff are kind of arguing where to put Bella because they can run him as a safety. He's got good size for the safety position, but they also can play him a little bit at slot receiver. And I was like, that's funny. That's exactly what he did at Callaway.
Right.
And quarterback as well. He played both sides of the football. So they're kind of having an argument there. But I think one of the biggest takeaways that I have seen so far from this season, I wrote a little bit about it a couple days ago, is that, you know, this is one of the more full rosters in spring that I, in my immediate recollection.
Same here.
A lot of bodies. And I don't mean that like that sounds. I mean, it's just troops and, you know, guys coming in. It's quality. There are quality bodies on campus right now in the early spring. You still have a really big freshman class coming in, but your midseason additions are here already. They're working out. Your linebacker core and your defensive line are relatively deep and highly competitive right now. And I think Mitch is not having to – he can specialize in certain positions. You don't have a lot of guys that are switching the jersey, going defense to offense, offense to defense. A couple springs ago, you had that. You had guys playing some DB and some wideout. You had guys playing some running back and some linebacker. It was a thing. If you were going to have a spring, you were going to be wearing a couple jerseys. This year, particularly, and I know that there have been other years like this too, but I'm noticing in this spring, outside of your Jared McCrays, who are skill specialists who can play slot receiver and running back, you don't have a lot of guys that are having to take drills in two or three different locations. They're specifically being trained as DBs or as linemen or as linebackers, and it's showing because you have some pretty competitive spots coming into the fall, and it'll be really interesting to see how summer really plays out. And what sort of – I mean, there's still loose change.
Yeah.
You know, this is a roster that's got 70-plus guys on it. I would not be surprised at all. We always see it every year. Last year it was Kendrick Caddis. There's always a guy who kind of gets in here at the last minute, and they're like, well, we'll take you. You know, we need help. And then they come in and contribute. And Caddis was one of those guys last year, transfer from Washington State.
Racer baseball, they head to Belmont yesterday as part of a, like, four-way – virtual tie for first, and lost the first game. Had a 5-0 lead, squandered that. They dropped, at least heading into today, all the way to fourth place. But that just gives you an idea of how jumbled it is up top.
It's really tight. Racers,
they won the weekend series last weekend against SEMO.
5 in a row.
And they can still win this one by winning today in 11 a.m. first pitch. Then they have a game set for tomorrow as well. They can still win it. And if they continue to do that, they'll still be in great shape in terms of the OVC tournament.
Well, and not only that, last weekend was huge in general, officially retiring. Dave had said some of the guys had mentioned at some point in the early 90s,
right,
Reagan's number had been all but retired.
Right.
Basically said, hey, listen, no one's going to wear the number again. But there said there was even a brief ceremony somewhere, but there's just not a lot of record of it anywhere. Nobody's really sure when or where it even happened. And so this whole moment with Johnny Reagan kind of spurned from his, you know, from his burial and his
right.
and his funeral, and Skirka and Dave talked about that, you know, it was important to get some sort of remembrance, some sort of a note.
Yeah.
Well, the note now is in left field.
Right.
You know, emblazoned on the left field wall. And, you know, didn't particularly win the game that they wore the Preds jerseys, but they won that series. Huge yeah. series win to make it 5 in a row. But you're right. Certainly an opportunity here to win the next two games in Nashville, beat the weather, and come home with a series victory. Who's on the mound today and tomorrow?
Didn't look that close.
I would imagine Shane Burns is going to be on for one of them. So, you know, you can almost chalk that up to a win the way that he's been pitching lately. And you know, you're still in great shape. You're exactly right. You are right. It's extremely jumbled at the top. The four teams up top are...
Yeah, and it looks... Well, Moorhead's one of them. Yep. Jacksonville State, I think. So, yeah, you got those teams. Unless the Racers collapse completely, they're going to be in the top six.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because the jumble's in the top four, but you know, it would take basically losing all of them. And I don't even know if they lost all of them if they still wouldn't be in the top six. They're in that good a shape.
Yeah, they really made themselves a nice little bed.
Yeah,
winning five straight series, taking two of three. I mean, when you can go 10 and 5 to start OVC play, 10 and 6, that's, you know, colossal. For a baseball program, because it just gives you a lot of cushion to make the OVC tournament. And this was, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first year that they reverted back to the six teams, or is it eight again?
I think it's still eight, according to the...
Is it?
To the...
Because I had heard a lot of talk that they were going to revisit... I believe you. I'm just saying, I think there's a lot of discussion that they may revert back to...
Yeah, if you look at the
old model.
Weekly release from the OVC, it has the bracket in it. Go 10, 12 pages deep in it, and it's there. And I think I thought it was maybe six, but it's still listed as eight, I think.
Yeah, but I know that there was a lot. At the end of last year, I had heard some scuttle from some league officials that there was a lot of discussion that they may just revisit and go back to six teams because they hadn't seen a lot of, you know, your 7 and 8s had won a game or two.
Right.
But you just hadn't seen. It's not like Major League Baseball where the parity's different.
Yeah.
You know, and you get wild cards win all the time going to the next, you know, to the division, you
sure.
know, moving on. But college baseball is just a little bit different. And so I think there's a lot of talk that they may revisit and go back to a six-team playoff. This year's OVC tournament, I believe, is
Illinois.
It's in Rent 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Carbondale.
Racers softball, they're still in first place. They're barely ahead of Jacksonville State, but they are. And those two teams meet up. Today, they have done terrific. This ramps up an 8-game road trip as they play at Jacksonville State. If they had a huge split this past week against Southeast Missouri.
I'm glad you brought
it up. 31-win team.
Massive split.
And won the first one. That takes the pressure off that second one. Didn't win the second one. Didn't really have to. So they're in a spot today. If they can at least split, they'll come home next week with the chance to probably clinch a share of the title with all the home games they have next week.
It's a massive split. I cannot begin to explain. Winning the second one would have been great.
Yeah.
If you'd lost the first one. That was the matchup. That was, you know, that was their ace versus, you know, Murray State's ace, Hannah James. You know, turns out it's a home run affair. Racers have a 4-3 lead going into the final inning. They get a 2-out grand slam from Logan Braunmeyer to break that game wide open. I mean, In the heart of the game, two outs, bases. I can't imagine that type of excitement. I saw it come up on the scoreboard, and I was like, "Oh wow!" Like, that's how you deliver a colossal win for a program that you're exactly right. 40-win SEMO team, top 60 RPI, and they stay top 60 because they were able to get the second win and split the series. But you know, this is a SEMO softball team that's been one of the nation's top, you know, mid-major programs this year. And for this young Racer team to come away with a split at Cape Girardeau, especially, again, winning the first one. You win the second one, I don't mean it like that sounds. It's the second pitcher, you know. It's the one that's like, okay, well, you can get us through this game, and then we'll throw in as many people as we can and try to win it. You know, it's almost like a midweek game for baseball.
Right.
But unreal win. And you're right. If they can come away with maybe even the first or the second win in Jacksonville tonight, be massive for the program for sure.
Morehead and Eastern next week, and they get, I think, North Alabama, which is non-conference. Win, lose, doesn't really make a lot of big difference. But, yeah, a split for them would be huge. A sweep would probably put them in a spot to where they, they're the favorite to win it then.
Well, and absolutely. Just the way the rest of the schedule plays out before the OVC tournament, which I believe, I don't think their tournament is still.
Yeah, it's like several weeks before the baseball tournament. Baseball's still going for like three more weeks or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but the OVC softball tournament, it's still in Alabama, isn't it?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah, they stayed down there. It's, what's the name of that park? I always.
I'll let you pronounce it. It's kind of a.
It's like 16 vowels.
I don't know what it is.
There's eight O's in it.
It's in Alabama.
Yeah. we know it's on the road.
Where it is.
It's like Ucha Tucha Ducha. Okay. I can't even try it. But the other racer sports that are doing really well right now, men's golf does start its OVC tournament next week. But women's tennis nearly came away with an OVC title. Just so happened that they had to defeat an undefeated
Not an OVC play, in all play.
All play. I think one of only two teams in the country that were undefeated in Austin Peay. And actually, I think they lost 5-2. Gave it a good go.
Yeah.
I was actually hoping to cover Murray State tennis today. It was supposed to be Good Friday.
Yeah.
But obviously the rain and the weather, it's 35 degrees and raining right now. The rain and the weather certainly pushed that back into Wednesday. And we had a lot of other things going on Wednesday, particularly some signings at All-A Baseball.
Yeah.
So the sectional was at Murray High and Lyon County. And so had a lot of other things going on. So that was really tough to squeeze in. But still, a great bounce back year for – I say bounce back year. It's really been a great bounce back 2 years for women's tennis. They nearly won the OVC last year and nearly won it again this year. Certainly a lot of talent for Caetano and his team.
Before I let you go, another Murray State assistant under Billy Kennedy, Amir Abdur-Rahim, the head coach at Kennesaw State. So the coaching tree branches out a little bit more for Murray State basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. The Atlantic Sun getting a good one.
Yeah.
What did he do this last year? Did he spend a year at – was he with Tom Crean at Georgia?
I think it was at Georgia Tech.
Georgia
was
Tech.
Was that not where it was? Maybe it was. I don't know. It may be. I at the moment don't really remember.
Yeah, the coaching tree there has been pretty interesting, really for racer history. But I'm happy for him. I mean, big time assistant under Billy Kennedy during his time here.
I think it was at Georgia, maybe.
And that's a big time hire for Kennesaw State.
Yeah.
Talking about former racers, you know. You wonder if Chris Shoemate's got a shot at NKU. Yeah,
I know he has a shot at it.
No, Darius Nichols, Shane's brother, is also in the mix there at NKU. He's been mentioned and linked to the job as a Florida assistant. So NKU doing its diligence after John Brannan was hired by Cincinnati. And then St. John's just hired Mike Anderson. So I had a couple people text me and ask me if they thought Matt McMahon would get the call at St. John's, like, or any of the jobs.
He's not going there.
Or any of the jobs leading into St. John's. Mm-hmm. Like, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. I haven't talked to Matt McMahon lately.
He's not going. I don't have to talk to him.
They're going to be.
He's not going for that one.
No, they're going to be. You talk about hitting the road next week. Big in-house visit reported for Elijah Wood, four-star point guard that recently decommitted from Tulane. That's a big, people will be watching that a little bit. He's a 6'5 point guard, by the way. Have you watched any footage on Elijah Wood at all?
I have not, no.
Yeah, you should. It's not too bad. 6'5.
Mm-hmm.
And legit 6'5. Like, not like a 6'5. Like, no, 6'5. And he is clearly the best player on the floor. Now, obviously, that's what mixtapes are for, to show that you're the best player on the floor. But
right.
So four-star point guard that class of 2020, he'd be a later get, you know, for two seasons from now. But, you know, you start looking now, they've made him a high priority over the next couple of weeks. And there's a couple other teams, obviously, that are in the mix for him, too. But you never know, you know.
Program has a pretty good record of getting guards and turning out okay.
Decent point guards. that have been solid in college basketball. Yeah. You know,
not bad.
We even did we even talk about him winning the koozie? At this point,
I guess we didn't. Because that was on Friday night. Yeah, no.
At this point,
but we knew he was going to.
Yeah, I. At this point,
and John Morant, we haven't even mentioned his name. We just assume everyone knows.
Yeah, we do.
And everyone does know.
I was actually fixing to say yeah, that. Like, I'm at the point now, and it's really funny to think about, but I'm at the point now where, Neil, you and I can just look at each other, and we can just talk about John Morant like we know him and everybody else knows him, but that's actually the case.
It is. Yeah.
I don't sleep much at all, and last night I was just watching his highlights from Marquette again, and I was like, man, I got to report on this. You got to call it.
I know.
Like I just keep thinking about this happened. Like, I still wake up, and I'm like, you know, I wake up and I'm married. I'm like, this happened. I'm married.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next feeling I have is, like, I wake up and I'm like, that Racer basketball team, that happened. You know, it's, like, right there. You know, like my marriage, my wife, she's listening right now. I love you. And
oh, please tell me she doesn't listen to these things.
Oh, no, she does.
Oh, no. And then, that's so bad.
I know it is. I told her the same thing. She's wasting her time. But then there's my marriage, and there's this Racer men's basketball season right there underneath it.
Aaron, just to give you a little, I mean, his hands are almost equal.
It's that close.
I can't, from where I'm sitting, I can't tell if they're equal or not.
We're going to need to review it.
I don't know. Yeah, we're going to have to, if we had another video angle, you might could tell there may be an inch of space. But from my angle, I'm going to have to call it a tie.
It was pretty remarkable. But there. Just to cap it all off, you know, you had a lot of people complain that Cassius Winston probably should have won it. And I think there's a fair argument there that he was an elite point guard, one of the best.
Sure he was.
Darius Garland probably would have won it if he'd been healthy at Vanderbilt. You just never know. But John Morant did unspeakable things that had never existed in college basketball. And I'm happy for him. Very much looking forward to. I was going to write a big story on the NBA lottery. I'm going to hold it. We've got some other things going on right now, but I'm going to really, really hold on to it until the draft lottery is revealed. I believe in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be the May or
12th
like
or 13th of May. Something I think like the first or second week of May. And looking forward to, you know, what we're going to talk about next week. We'll see what happens to the NFL draft next week. So
there we go. We might have some Murray State stuff in there. I don't know. By the way, you can hear the NFL draft on WNBS. We'll have it for you.
There we go.
Right here. All right, Ed. Appreciate it. I know you have racquetball to get to.
Oh, I'm probably
you just told me before we went on you were going to kick Winder's butt.
No, I'm going to go lose.
What'd you tell me that for?
Oh,
that's not
I was trying to psych myself up.
Oh, okay. All right.
Winder's going to crack. He'll kill me.
Yeah, but he's been fattening up on pimento cheese sandwiches and cookies at the golf tournament. I'm sure.
You'd say that, but you know, I'm telling you, he's still
got it.
He's still got the game.
Is that right?
All those guys. He, Ross Malone, Eric Peniston. I mean, they've got a sweet game. They keep beating the crap out of me with it.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week, probably Thursday or Friday. Not sure which. I'll be in St. Louis for a couple of games, so we'll probably be Friday because I have to do the rotary thing next week, right?
Yeah, you do.
So I guess it'll be Friday.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. We'll see you then.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.